Hey there, it's Dr. Stacy Cordovano. I want veterinarians to learn to be happier, healthier, wealthier, and more grateful for the life that we've created. On this podcast, I will speak with outside-of-the-box thinkers to hear new ideas on ways to improve our day-to-day life. Welcome to The Whole Veterinarian. Hey there. I hope you guys are excited to learn about intergenerational differences. This topic is so important for our workplaces, I have come to realize. My guest today is Jay McCord. Jay is a highly requested speaker, trainer, and consultant to companies, institutions, and organizations globally. He's recognized as an authority on the multi-generational workplace and the emerging remote work and virtual environment. Jay's high-value content and high-energy live, virtual, and hybrid events have earned him the nickname of your Chief Encouragement Officer. Jay has a great insight into our equine world. I'm so thankful for his time. I really hope you enjoy this one, and I hope you're able to bring something from today's discussion into your own practice. Hi, Jay. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, it is such an honor and privilege to be with you, Stacy. I could not wait for us to get on to this session today.
Me too. So we met at AAP. You did a talk on generational differences, and then you helped moderate a panel on which I was involved. So I feel like I know you really well, but I'm hoping you can tell listeners a little bit more about yourself before we get started.
Sure. I've had the great privilege for the last 20 years, since 2000, 22 years now, of speaking all over the world on this multi-generational workplace that we find ourselves in. Now we have five separate generations all smashing against each other, all wanting it their own way, all communicating very differently. And about 3 or 4 years ago, was speaking for an event, a chamber event here in Kentucky, and a rep from an animal pharma company comes up and says, can you do that talk for 70 equine vets in the fall? Sure, absolutely. And that started an amazing journey where I've had the great privilege to speak to equine vets and those that serve equine medicine about how to get along better, how to do relationships better, both internally with staff, externally with clients and vendors, because Stacy, we really are not great at relationships these days. And a lot of it has to do with this generational thing. So I couldn't wait to talk about this, but I get the privilege of speaking all the time to all kinds of audiences about this, but I love what I call the home team of equine medicine.
Awesome. All right. So I am fully convinced that this is super important to us, and I'm so glad that you made it into our equine world. But let's dig into it for people that aren't really aware. So I know when you spoke, you mentioned this treadmill analogy and how people are what matter, but that's really not what we're focusing on an organizational level. So let's dig into that. Explain that a little bit more for people.
Yeah. I mean, frankly, we've all become numbers. We're a quota. We are a budget line item. We are an expense or a profit center. And we've gotten away from just being people. And so one of the things that I would challenge your listeners to think about is think about the people in your life, professionally and personally, and how much time do you give them? And maybe not time so much as how much of your bandwidth do you give them? And what I find often is that we don't give anybody any bandwidth because we really don't have a lot. And a lot of that has to do with COVID and all the changes we have to keep up with and all the things that are uncertain. But the bottom line to it is, Stacy, that if we can get better at relationships, if we can get better at communication to each other, lots of the problems we're frustrated with right now go away.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. And then I also know that you've talked about this 8 and 5 rule that has to do with talking to people directly.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
What is the 8 rule?
Yeah. So just very quickly, a lot of times what people will hear me say is I always want folks to become people that know the times and know what to do, or organizations to be marked as knowing the times and knowing what to do. And what I mean by that simply is if you are seen as someone that knows the times, it means you know what's going on in my world, in someone else's world. And if you know what to do, well, it simply means that you have solutions to my problems. And if you've got solutions to my problems, I'm going to invite you to the table. What stands in the way of that are these numbers 8 and 5. And the first one is 8. Did you realize there's now only about 8 seconds or less of attention span someone will give you? So what that means is, Stacey, that if I don't bring you value in the first 8 seconds, you might not listen to what I have to say after that. And what is so challenging for folks in your line of work is that you're not selling pens and paper clips and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, the stuff you talk about is complicated. You have very large words and you have lots of complexity to your language. So the point simply is that you've got folks on the other end that you're communicating to that might not be listening anymore because the 8 second window closed and you didn't even realize it. So 8 seconds of attention span or less begs the question, how much time are you spending thinking about who your audience is, what's important to them, how you want them to feel? And if I could teach anybody listening today to be a better communicator, it would simply be just ask those 3 questions before you send the email, make the phone call, have the consult, you know, sit down with your family. Who's my audience? What's important to them? And how do I want them to feel after this exchange? 60 seconds answering those 3 questions before you have an encounter with anyone absolutely changes the level of communication. So 8 seconds stands in the way. So that's one thing, and we can't dive into that too deep. Just know that people don't have any bandwidths, and we've got to bring them value early and often. But the 5 is really what we want to talk about today, and that is that for the first time in history, you have now 5 separate generations working side by side. You have traditionals, boomers, Gen X, millennials, and Gen Z all in the workplace at this moment, all wanting it their own way. And it causes tremendous miscommunication. The example I used from stage that you heard me talk about was if I ask you to define the words simple technology, would someone older than you define it differently? Sure, they would. Someone younger? Yeah, absolutely. So the point simply is every single time you say something, even if you get into the side of the 8 seconds, it might not come across the way you thought it did, depending upon who's in the audience. So we want to make sure people understand those generations better so that they can connect better.
Yeah, I actually brought this home to my husband, the example you gave about who is James Bond. I thought that was perfect.
Yeah. So this is the example I use all the time, and I've been doing it for years, but it probably sets the stage best. But it's just when I say James Bond, picture the actor you see first in your head. Well, the actor you saw first might be very different than your neighbor. And the point simply is James Bond's the same character, but depending upon when you grew up and what movies you saw, you just saw him different in your head than maybe I did. Well, what does that have to do with you? Well, different generations define things differently. Things like good benefits plan. What's that? Mm-hmm. Fair compensation, flexible work environment,
right.
You know, mental health, all of those things, when they're defined differently, can cause a lot of miscommunication.
Okay. Is there anything we can dig into to help people understand those different generations and how they're thinking about things?
Yeah. So let me go one step further on those words, because I know this really impacted you at AAP when we talked about it, but the words hard work, I use them as an example that this is something that's absolutely killing your industry. As funny as this sounds, that different generations define hard work differently, this is really a root problem to the recruiting and retention issues you're facing. Because if you think about traditionally what a practice looks like, who owns it, how old they are, it's very different than who's coming out of vet school right now. You know, so you've got folks coming out of vet school that have a lot of different issues than some of these practice owners did when they came out of vet school. Some of the same, but one of the big ones is student loan debt, right? Mm-hmm. Average debt's $180,000. Most is north of that. Mm-hmm. And that's a very different ballgame stepping into that world than when that practice owner did during their first few years. So the point simply is, if one generation defines hard work as 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, that's what I did. That's what hard work looks like. And someone is saying, I'm not going to sacrifice my health and my family and that to do that, but I work equally hard, there's where we can have opportunity for each other to wake up and realize we're just defining a term differently. So I just wanted to camp on that because I know that made an impact.
Yeah, it did. It really did. I mean, you said that in the meeting, hard work is killing your industry. And it wasn't funny at all. It was like very poignant to me for sure. Like that is a fact.
Right. And your podcast is an outcrop of wanting to help people understand some of these things because of what you had gone through, mm-hmm. you know, forcing yourself to think of terms, maybe defining those terms in ways that weren't accurate. So I just, again, want people to understand that there's an 8-second window. That's tough. Then you have five generations that hear whatever you said very differently. So that creates another layer of difficulty. Mm-hmm. So what I'd love to do with you is let your listeners go through each generation and let me just give you one word.
Perfect.
I'm going to give you one word for each. When you know that word, you can better connect to that generation. Okay, fair enough.
Yep, let's do it.
Okay, all right. So traditionals. Traditionals were born before 1946. It makes them about 76 years old and older right now. Their word is rules. They love rules and structure. And why wouldn't they? I mean, the public works programs of FDR, the military bureaucracy of World War II, post-World War II corporate bureaucracy. This group loves and appreciates rules. Boomers come next. They're born roughly between 1946 and 1966. And what I would say is don't ever get hung up on years because you'll see all kinds of things on the internet where it slides. Think about the word. And if you identify with the word, boomers' word is legacy. And that stems from right now, 10,000 baby boomers every single day for the next 17 years are going to retire. So 10,000 boomers retiring, legacy matters. These folks have been doing something, doing it well, doing a lot of things for a couple of decades now, and they really want their work to have mattered. They want their lives to have mattered. So legacy is very important to these folks. And when you're working with boomers, don't be afraid to try and help them improve their legacy. That's how you connect better. Gen X, my generation, born roughly between 1966 and 1981, we are the smallest generation. We're smashed between millennials and boomers, these giant generations. We're kind of like the middle child of the generational family, totally forgotten at times. But yet we make up a huge percentage of leadership right now across every sector. Our word is level. And the reason why it's level is because of the video games we grew up playing. All the games, Space Invaders, Centipede, Pac-Man, everything that we played was built around put a quarter in a machine, ride the quarter as long as you could up as many levels to try and get on a high scoreboard. And what Gen X is trying to do right now is to level up in a number of games. The games may be their family, it may be their health, it may be their profession, it may be something else. But the point simply is when you figure out what that Gen X person that you're trying to connect to is trying to level up in, and you're able to help them do that, boy, the connection is huge. All right. Millennials, your generation, born roughly between 1981 and 2000. A big asterisk by that, because you'll see a lot of stuff out there that millennials stop in 1996. And again, that's all just depending upon who you read. But it's the word that I think identifies the generation better that you identify with. So millennials, the word is impact. You guys want to have impact and you want it now. It's in your DNA to go change the world, and the world is your stage, and you want to do something that has a large impact, and you want to do it now. You don't want to wait 40 years to just start working on that. So there's a hunger for your generation to do things that matter, have larger impact. So the key way to connect to millennials is just to say, hey, Stacy, how do you see change in the world and how can I help? Those two simple questions to millennials connect you in amazing ways. And then Gen Z, the last generation, born roughly between 2000, 2015, some would say 1996. The safe thing to say about Gen Z is they are in school right now. The bulk of them are in school. Elementary, middle, high school for sure. Some would say in college, some would say just out of college, but they're in school and they are what's coming out as future employees. Their word is customized. Everything in their world is customized to their individual standards. And the example I use from stage is my daughter's letter jacket. She went to the same high school I went to. I graduated in 1986. I had like three choices in the type of, you know, what I got on my letter jacket. Riley has like 2,000 decisions, everything from the collar to the cuffs to the color of the buttons, the size, leather arms. I mean, it was crazy. We bought it from the exact same store. and I went in and nearly lost my mind. But that my point to you is that this is a generation that has expectation that everything can be customized to their standards and their liking. Now, that creates lots of problems, but it creates lots of opportunities. And for you all in this profession, I would just challenge you to start thinking about what can be customized inside your practices, because not everything can. I mean, obviously medical procedures are medical procedures, but what can be and how can you accentuate that? So let me run through real quick. Traditionals is rules. Boomer is legacy. Gen X is level. Millennials is impact. And Gen Z is customized.
Perfect. So I want to dig in. Maybe we can do some specific examples of within a workplace, specifically veterinarian, where there might be a disconnect and how two people might navigate that better.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just go with the big elephant in the room, and that is student loan debt.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you have to realize that you're a practice owner. Let's say that you're Gen X, boomer, traditional practice owner, male, generally speaking, and you have to now know that 80% plus of grads from vet school are female, and that if that female goes equine, there are all kinds of headwinds that are going to push her either out of the industry completely, or to join a small animal practice, or to join a practice that's based on work-life balance. Okay, that's reality. That's what you're dealing with.
Yep.
Okay, so if I'm a practice owner and I've got a 401k plan, I have to recognize that this young dynamic vet, she has $400,000 worth of debt. And I'm going to pay her, what, $60,000, $75,000 when she starts out?
$75,000 if you're lucky, yeah.
Right. Okay, so let's say $75,000 on top end. The numbers don't work. They don't work. They can't pay that debt off. And then I forget the name of it, but what's the wonderful option you get where you pay?
Income-based repayment.
Okay, so income-based repayment. Okay, yeah, that's awesome. So after a certain number of years, everything that was interest becomes principal. So you're in a death trap of never getting out of that debt. Okay, I'm a practice owner. I've got a 401k plan. And let's say I match dollar for dollar, something like that. Why in the world couldn't I just say, I'll match you dollar for dollar paying on your student loan debt as long as you work here? Hey, I will pay your student debt loan payment directly while you work here. You've just created a recruiting and retention tool that is so different than anybody else out there. And they don't give a rip about the 401k. They don't care. But if you are committing these hard dollars to a 401k, and that's if they were to match dollar for dollar, this is what you'd spend on it, spend it over here. It's the same dollar. So that's just recognizing the times. They have larger debt. They're looking for more personal life. Mental health is a huge issue. They're not going to just bury that. Well, why don't we attack this? And Stacey, here's an example. I don't know if I share this with you or not, but I was doing a VMG group of equine vets back 2 years ago. And this doctor stopped me after I was telling that story. He's like, let me tell you how right this guy is. Let me tell you what I did. He said, I've got a young employee that will never leave me because I paid off her student loan debt. And he said, you know how much I had to pay off? And everybody in the room was thinking like, you know, $180,000, $50,000, whatever. He said, $3,000. He said, now, I could have given her a $3,000 bonus at the end of the year. She could have paid her own debt off. He said, but I paid it directly on that student loan. And she cried and thanked me. And she's not ever going to leave me. She's doggedly loyal. My point to you is, it may not cost you as much as you think. It may just be something simple.
But again, it's going back to the actual relationship you have with that person to ask that question.
Yeah. Can I give you one more example?
Yeah.
Just so people have some creative thought. Okay. So we've been living in a pandemic. Don't know if you've heard, but it's really kind of, you know, messed everything
it's
up.
Bummer.
Yeah. These folks that are in vet school right now, single, they have bought dogs and cats like crazy. Everybody across the country has been buying dogs and cats like crazy. So a lot of these students have dogs and cats that are their children. Okay. They think of them as their children. Now, let me ask you a question. So this young person's going to come intern for you and you're going to work them 100 hours a week and this, that, and the other. If they had actual children, would you feel good about them never seeing their kids at all, ever, right? You know, I mean,
questionable. Some places might not care about it. Right. Let's hope that.
But again, that's who's going to suffer coming up. But yeah. The point simply is, if they view these dogs and cats as their children, they'd really like to let them out during the day or at least say hello. What can that vet practice do to create a space for their dogs and cats? Oh, I know. There's the whole thing of, well, but dogs and horses, you know, we don't. Oh, I'm sorry. I see a lot of vets driving around with their dogs in the truck.
Yeah.
I mean, come on now. So yeah. The point simply is, what if you created a small kennel area? What if you created a place where 3 days a week, you know, on a rotating basis, I could bring my dog or I could have my cat here and I could at least go see my child. Mm-hmm. You do that, you're wildly different than anybody out there right now. Nobody's mm-hmm. doing that. I'll just tell you, see it everywhere. So it's those types of things, Stacey, that they're not hard. They're not expensive or anything like that necessarily. It just takes a lot more thinking than most people want to do.
Let me ask you a situation from the other direction. So if I'm a millennial or even Gen Z coming in mm-hmm. wanting to make an impact or wanting to change things up, customize what my package looks like, and I'm dealing mm-hmm. with an older, probably boomer boss that mm-hmm. is focused on his or her legacy and hasn't really gone outside of the box at all. What's an opening avenue that I can take to maybe get them to open their mind?
Mm-hmm. I think that one, when you sit down with them, first off, you need to find out what their careers look like, what they've done, what their accomplishments are. You need to know that doc. It goes both ways. You need to know your audience and what's important to them and how you want them to feel. So that doc has done some amazing things in their lifetime, let's say. You need to figure out how you working at that practice enhances that doctor's personal legacy. Okay. What can I bring to the table that's going to bring that person value, going to increase their legacy? That's what you got to answer before that you ever open your mouth. But when you go in, you articulate that. I am so excited to at least interview with you or talk to you about this opportunity because of I've seen you've done these types of things. Show that you know that person. And then secondarily, as you probably know, there are a number of things that are very different from the time maybe you graduated to me graduating, one of which is student debt. It's huge. You know, it's a big concern of mine. This is what this looks like for me as an individual. Let me show you what I'm dealing with here. And I would love to bring value to this place. Are there opportunities to do this? Fill in the blank. If you want to customize something, are there opportunities to do this? If that doc says no, absolutely not, then you now know I'm working in a place that's pretty rigid and it may be worth it. You know, having this on my resume or the experience I get working for this person might just be worth all the pain and suffering, right? Mm-hmm. Or it may be that, thank you so much. I'm going to be miserable at this place. I'm going to take my talent somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, no, it does. I think that's great. I think it's easy to do from the boomer side because there's so much new, but
right.
Sometimes, I mean, I hear from a lot of younger people that feel like they have no idea how to even approach the idea of changing anything in the practice. So no, I think that's
well, and Stacey, to that point, let's say that you've got a Gen X practice owner that you're interviewing with. Okay. So I said the word is level. What mm-hmm. you have to do is try and figure out what is that practice owner trying to level up in? Are they trying to take the practice to a new level? Mm-hmm. Are they trying to step away from the practice to take their personal life to? Well, then mm-hmm. how can you as a new employee help them climb those levels? What is it specifically you can do? So make sure you always give something before you ask for something. I mean, it's very basic stuff, but we've gotten away from it.
For sure. That makes a lot of sense. Okay. So I think that was a great coverage. I think it's like a great introduction for people to start mulling over. I know it took me like a little bit of digesting to even begin to think about how to apply this. So I want to wrap up, but I want to ask you if you have one or two pieces of advice for people listening who definitely have to navigate this intergenerational thing within their practice.
Yeah. What I would encourage you with is this. Nobody knows what to do right now. It's okay to be frustrated. That is certainly one side of the coin and it is legit. And your feelings, whatever feelings you've got, are legitimate. And I just want to tell you that everybody's struggling with. And COVID has created this chaos of nobody knows what they're doing day to day. I mean, the rules change and I've got to keep up with this. So I want you to just first off, give yourself some grace that this is hard. Nobody's ever tried to do what you're trying to do in a pandemic. I mean, there is no rule book, Stacey. We can't go and pull off the old number 37 off the shelf. You know, right. Let's just do it like we did in the 70s. So what we're looking for, though, out there, what people are gravitating to is someone who is a courageous leader. Someone who is attempting to go forward, even despite all these headwinds. The headwinds of the generational piece, what going forward in that looks like is just being open to other people teaching you something that maybe you don't know it all, no matter what age you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can be the youngest person in the room and think you know it all, and vice versa. The point is that if you will seek to understand before you're understood, that old Stephen Covey fourth habit of the seven habits, you know, seek to understand this person. What is it that they need that I can give them, that I can help them with? And what I think is I'm seeing are there's some folks out there like yourself, like others that are opening the dialogue, having these conversations. And that's what we did at AAP was mm-hmm. we just put a doctor of every generation on the stage and just ask you all a bunch of questions like, hey, what was it like to go to vet school? You know, back in this day versus now, and what were some of the same things and what were some of the things that are wildly different? You start having those discussions and it gets really exciting really quick. I think that what I'm also seeing out there, Stacey, is a tremendous amount of fear, anxiety over just uncertainty. And what I would encourage your listeners to be is just people of consistency. Just be people that if you say you're going to do it, you're going to do it. If you get mad over these types of things, you always get mad over these types of things. I mean, you know, it's not like I'm flying off the handle and I never know where this guy's going to be. Or it's when I mess up in this way, he always gets really upset because he should. That I don't need to mess up. Be consistent people, because the inconsistency of our world creates an opportunity for people that are courageous and consistent to be very attractional. I think the biggest thing is to we can educate ourselves through mentor relationships up and down. And what I would tell your listeners is the way I define a mentor is someone that is equal parts instructor and equal parts advocate. Someone that's going to teach me some things, but who also is going to advocate for me with no skin in the game. They're not trying to get 80% of what I make, or, you know, it's they see value in me and they're trying to move me forward. That's what a mentor is. Look, though, for reverse mentorship. This is a concept where someone younger than you mentors you. And I teach executives this all the time, and they always get real cross-eyed when I say this, but it came from a company in California that had a 96% retention rate on millennials, which is super high. And one of the things they did was this reverse mentorship. Simply put, when that company hired someone young, that young person immediately started to mentor the executive team. Now, every boomer in the room freaks out when I say that. And like, oh, the unicorns, here they all come. You know, but listen to what I'm saying. Millennials are the largest generation on the planet and the largest generation in the workplace. So whether you are one or you're not, doesn't matter. You guys are going to affect the workplace for decades, just like boomers have. Well, doesn't it make sense to crawl around in Stacy's head now before she becomes the main person I depend upon? Yeah. Stacy, what do you like? What does this website look like to you? Would your friends buy this? Would you ask a lot of questions? Let that younger person, in this case, a millennial, mentor you. I have a millennial reverse mentorship group and I have a Gen Z reverse mentorship group because I am so Gen X. I can tell you everything about Gen X and how we think and so forth, but I can't think like a millennial or a Gen Z. And if I'm going to teach people about it, that's my job. Boy, I better get me some experts around me. And that's that smaller group. And I'll tell you, my stepson is part of my Gen Z group. And when he was 13, he's 18 now, but when he was about 13, 14 years old, one of the questions I love to ask is, what's your favorite app and why? I asked him that. He never batted an eye back then. He said, Robinhood. It's the first time I'd ever heard of the Robinhood app. Yeah. My man at 14 is trading stocks with no commissions, you know. And that's how I learned about Robinhood. Now, okay, I could say, well, you know, I'm this old and I should know. No, let other people teach you. So that's what I would say is be people of courage and consistency that allow others to teach you, older and younger. And all of a sudden, good things start to happen.
That's great. And I love that definition of mentorship. I really like the advocacy part.
Piece. Yeah, we look at it as I'm going to teach this younger person everything I know, and they're going to, you know, it's going to be awesome. And let me give you one other practical and tactical for your listeners. When you're mentoring someone younger than you, specifically, if you're dealing at all with millennials or Gen Z, the line that helps you mentor, opens the door, is, can I shorten your runway to success? Would you allow me an opportunity to shorten the runway to your success? Before you tell them anything, just ask permission. Hey, and the permission is, I'd like to shorten your runway to being successful. Nobody's going to turn you down, number one, but it also shows respect to that younger person that, you know, I'd like to tell you something here, but I'm not going to just barge in the door with it. But if you're going to be a mentor, you are equal parts instructor and equal parts advocate. You are willing to make a call on their behalf, to go to bat for them, to help them move up in my Gen X leveling description. And most people don't see it that way. I've had a lot of mentors in my life who want to take 80% of what I make. You know, I always say that's not mentorship, that's extortion. So just be mindful that if you step into that mentor role, you're stepping into something of instructor and advocate. And mentee, no matter what age you are and who's mentoring you, you are a sponge.
I love that. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for your time. If people want to find out more about you or work with you, how can they get in touch?
Yeah, three easy ways. The website is simply McCordInc.com. And McCord is spelled funny. So it's McCHORD. So McCord is always with an H in it. But McCordInc.com. You can just email me at jmccord, JAYMCCHORD. @gmail.com, or you can call me or text me at 859-492-6555.
Perfect. And I'll make sure to add those to the show notes so people have easy access as well. And then I ask all of my guests, which I did not warn you about this, what is one small thing that has brought you joy this past week?
Oh, gosh. You know, I will tell you, being healthy. Because, and the reason I say that is this time last year, this exact weekend last year, my daughter and I were in St. Louis for a volleyball tournament for her. Snowmageddon hit. It was -20 degrees. People were dying trying to be out on the interstate. We made it home through, it was the most treacherous drive I've ever had, only to come home to my entire family having COVID, but the bad COVID, like lose the taste, don't get over it for months, no breath type of stuff. My father-in-law had been diagnosed with cancer. My dad was struggling with hip surgery stuff that just wasn't doing so well. And there were just a number of other things. Here we are 12 months later, and I look and all my father-in-law was miraculously healed. I am home safe and sound. Nobody's got COVID here. All right, we've actually survived it a couple of times. And I'm able to go out and go run today or, you know, be with my daughter, my wife, my son. So, man, talk about joy filled. It's like a year ago, there were some serious headwinds on us.
Yeah, and that's a big thing to be joyful about, for sure. That's not a little one.
Mm-hmm. So I will tell you this, last piece of Jayism for your listeners. My first boss, he was the smartest man I ever knew. He had all kinds of these isms. But one of the things he said to me was, your health is your first million. And if you treat your health like the first $1 million you make, then you'll guard it, you'll give it away, You'll invest it, all the things you do with money. But what's really fascinating is he said it's really hard to make $1 million if you're not healthy. But if you are healthy, you can go make $1 million. So I'll just tell your listeners to take care of themselves mentally, physically, financially, all those things, and take care of those other people that are in your life, personally and professionally.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I really enjoyed and had a blast, and I know people are going to get a lot out of this.
Well, it's been an honor. Thanks, Stacey. Appreciate it.
Thanks again for listening today. I so very much appreciate the time you spend with me. I know it is so valuable. For more information or to sign up for our monthly newsletter, please check out the newly revamped website at thewholeveterinarian.com. You can also connect with me on Instagram at thewholeveterinarian. And lastly, if you have a spare moment, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts if you're enjoying the show, or share it with a friend. Thanks so much, and I will talk to you again soon.